last of my kind. Am I the last of my kind?
This is WGN. I'm John Williams in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. I have to tell you a story of a friend of mine who's not in the studio just yet. His name is Eric Carafa. He was the one that called in from Lollapalooza. He's my music buddy, and he's always given me song ideas, recommendations, and suggestions. He's in a band himself. And he said to me not that long ago, he goes, "Are you into Jason Isbell?" I said, "I don't know who that is." He told me the story of Jason Isbell, the Drive-By Truckers, the new band, and this guy's work. And he got me to listen to some of it, and I found myself instantly liking this. And it's a kind of, I don't know how you would exactly describe the music, but if it's at all folk, country, pop, rock, I'm not exactly sure what it is. I would not automatically describe it as the kind of music I'm interested in. And yet there's something about this guy's writing and this guy's singing and this guy's music that I just immediately found myself liking. So my buddy said, "Hey, if you ever get a chance to interview him, could I sit in the studio?" And he's not here right now. He's supposed to be. Jason, how are you?
I'm good, John. Thank you for having me.
Don't say anything memorable until my friend Eric gets here, okay?
Because I'll try to stay unmemorable.
Welcome to Chicago. Nice to meet you in person.
Thank you. It's good to meet you as well. It's a beautiful time to be here.
I trust you've been through Chicago a few times before.
Yeah, quite a few times. Yeah, we started out, we were playing at places like the Abbey Pub and...
Really?
Yeah, and we would stay at Kelly Hogan and Nico Case had an apartment here.
Really?
Together, yeah, and we would sleep on their floor when I was in the Truckers 15 years ago.
So that was you up and coming. Now you're in the fancy hotels, is that right?
It's kind of fancy. I'm a little uncomfortable in there, but, you know, it's all right. My daughter likes to make a mess in the fancy hotels.
She travels with you, does she?
She does, yeah. It's her birthday. She's 2 years old today.
Well, I guess the whole family, because your wife, who plays violin, sings in the band. Is she with you as well?
Is it the whole band? Well, tonight she is playing a show of her own in Virginia, but she'll be back with us tomorrow for tomorrow night's show. So she left our tour to go do two solo shows, and then she's coming back to rejoin us tomorrow.
Congratulations on the Nashville Sound.
Thank you. This came out
this summer, right?
It did, yeah, a couple months back.
How's this one doing?
It's better than anything we've done before, you know, which is just amazing to me because I never expected things to go as well as they have.
I had trouble putting my finger on exactly how I would describe your music to our listeners. How would you describe it if they didn't know you?
It's songwriter music, you know, it's story driven, narrative based, and musically it's based on rock and roll, I guess. But nowadays, I mean, you know, I don't listen to one kind of music, and I don't really know anybody who does anymore. So it's good that we cover a lot of different territory, you know. I just write the songs, and they sort of sound like people who I admired when I was growing up, like Neil Young and John Prine, and you know, and then that's what you get. It's not a throwback, but it's kind of rock and roll.
I noticed some of your influences, and I didn't see Loudon Wainwright on there. Was he somebody you listened to?
Yeah, you know what? I do like his songs a whole lot. And my wife does, too. And I'm a big fan of Rufus Wainwright.
Yeah, well, who's not?
I think he's one of the best singers on the planet.
The way he writes, to me, are such personal stories, but they're very accessible and sometimes relatable, even though they're not about you. Mm-hmm. I guess that's the craft, and that describes your songwriting as well.
I think so. If you pick the right details, you know, people will start saying things to you like, "How did you know my life so well?" And I think that's when you've really communicated with somebody.
And how do you know when you're writing a song that that thing that you're feeling is so universal?
My wife tells me.
Put that in or take that out, maybe.
Yeah,
she'll
help me with that. But, it, you know, it's a good question. I think usually if you err on the side of honesty and just try to make yourself a little bit uncomfortable with what you're telling everybody.
That's a nice way to put it. And maybe you're surprised yourself a little bit, too, sometimes. What resonates with folks.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Some of the songs that are people's favorites weren't ones I would have picked, you know.
Jason Isbell's in the studio. He's at the Chicago Theater tonight and tomorrow night. If you're lucky, you can buy a ticket still.
There's still some tickets. There's a few left for both nights.
So we've got a little time after the news. Will you stick around and say hi?
I will. I'd love to.
I want to play a little more of your music, and then you and I want you to write a song with me, and it'll go to the top of the charts.
Okay, great.
Yeah, I don't think so. It's 157.
I've got some friends in Nashville that could do that. I could guarantee you a chart topper, but I'm not one of them.
Is it easy for some people to do that? Like they
it
don't
looks
hook,
easy.
They know they know it, or no, it's a gift, it's a talent, it's hard to do.
I think it's just a different magic trick, you know. I think if you've worked hard enough on it and you know the formula that well, it can become easy. I think that's probably why a lot of what you hear on the radio is not so great, because people are just going through the motions. But, you know, that's Nashville. It's got good and bad points.
Well, we're glad you're here. Jason Isbell is in the studio. This is a bright side for me and some of my friends. The Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter is at the Chicago Theater tonight and tomorrow night. You might still be able to get a ticket to that. The show this evening and tomorrow, we are lucky because he's in our studio right now. We wanted to talk a little bit about some of the music, play some of it, and kind of get your reaction to and feedback from all of this. Jason, again, thanks for coming into our studio.
Thank you. Thanks for having me in.
A buddy of mine who told me all about you, a guy named Eric Karaff, is sitting next to you now. Hi, Eric. How are you?
Hello, John. How are you?
How about this?
You made it.
I did. I'm here.
I held all the important stuff back.
Okay, good.
I told him not to say anything important until you got here, because this is kind of your thing. Why are you such a fan of his, by the way?
I've been a fan of Jason since he was in the Drive-By Truckers. And that started, I think, in 2001.
2001, yeah.
And you were a young guy. You were 21, 22 years old?
22, yeah.
And what was that like to go from, I think you had a publishing contract at Fame, or with Fame, right?
Just for a little while.
Right, right.
Yeah, and then the Truckers had a member that didn't show up, and so their relationship with him didn't work out. Yeah, it was very lucky for me. I just hopped in the van and went.
Is that really? Because some DJs got their start that way, or newscasters, or movie stars. You know, the guy didn't show up. Hey, kid, read the news. And the next thing you know,
it was like that.
It was
like
at a house party, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was at a house party. This guy, Dick Cooper, who he was managing the Truckers at that point in time, and had worked in the music business forever. He lived in Muscle Shoals, and they had a house party at his house, and they left the chair open. They're like, if he shows up, he can sit in the chair, but if not, you know. And about halfway through, I was like, I can play these songs if y'all want me to. So I think it was initially just for that one record, because they had the Southern Rock Opera, and they thought they needed three guitars for that record. But then I started writing songs for the band. And
well, if we find out that you broke his knees and that you were the reason he wasn't there, that would be a very dark version of this story.
No. He and I actually have been friends for a long time. He's from Muscle Shoals, so I knew him before I knew the Truckers guys. He's an incredible guitar player, but I got really lucky, and I was out with them for about 6 years. We came through Chicago a lot. We were here all the time, playing the Hideout and the Abbey Pub, and
really,
yeah, all those rooms.
I need to go through your wiki with you just to make sure everything's up to date, if you don't mind.
Oh no, what does it say?
Michael Jason Isbell, born February 1st, 1979.
I think that's right. Yeah,
Grammy Award winning American singer songwriter guitarist from Green Hill, Alabama, in Lauderdale County.
We got to get multi in there before Grammy. Can we get that?
Well, get your people.
I'm trying to
help you out here. This is your, this is the other Jason's job. And then it says here, he's best known for his solo career, his work with the band The 400 Unit. And then it says here under personal, Isbell attended the University of Memphis studying English and creative writing. Yeah. He did not graduate, still requiring one physical education credit.
It's close.
Are you kidding me?
It's human fitness and wellness. It was a book. It was a book class. It wasn't the PE credit. I got that one, but the human fitness and wellness course, I just stood up and walked out. I was in there for a few weeks, and I made it through. And then we were just talking about how many calories were in everything, and I just walked out. I couldn't do it.
If you want to make anything of yourself someday, you've got to get a college diploma, don't you?
You have to.
This college degree is important, and you walked out of class 1 hour all of the time. All of the money is your parents or your family or friends going, Jason, what are you doing? Get your degree.
I failed the BS test. You know, I think a college degree for a lot of people is a sign of how much BS you are willing to tolerate, and I made it about 3.5 years. That's about how much I'll take.
I wanted to read this part, too. It says, Isbell married singer-songwriter and violinist Amanda Shires, with whom he'd worked on and off for a decade, but you're husband and wife now.
We are.
You also team up in writing at least some songs, right?
Sometimes, yeah.
And the two of you then sing and perform together on stage.
Yes.
I was thinking what a thrill that must be, because those of us who are married and love our spouses have a personal, emotional, a physical connection with them. But then to be able to do something like make music and sing together mm-hmm. must just be, you know, even a more intimate kind of connection to most people have.
I think we're really, really fortunate that we can do that. And yeah, I mean, it adds weight to everything, you know. Every show that we're playing is heavier because all those songs we're singing to each other, and it's a beautiful thing, you know.
Do you have really good sex after the shows because you feel so connected?
Sometimes, but usually after the shows we're pretty exhausted, so I don't know if it's the best sex. And we're on the back in the back of the bus, and then our baby and the nanny are sleeping one wall away, and they're very thin walls, so you got to be careful. Plus, the buses have those Tempur-Pedic mattresses.
All right, never mind.
Anyway.
But I was thinking of, like, in broadcast news, and William Hurt and Holly Hunter were both kind of, like, affectionate for each other, but they really had a connection when he was doing the news, and she was in his ear saying, all right, you say this, the director and the anchor. Yeah. And there's a certain sort of synergy that people working closely together have that the rest of us just can't appreciate.
I think that may be true. You know, you have to really love your spouse to spend that much time around him.
Downsides are worse too.
Well, if we weren't, if we didn't like each other's company as much as we do, there would be a lot of downsides of it. But the fact is, you know, I don't think my work would be the same if, you know, she wasn't there to help me. Because a lot of people, they have a little success in a creative pursuit, and then they start sort of eliminating the people who are willing to call them and edit them and say, you know, say things like, this isn't your best, and she'll do that for me. I try to do that for her, too.
And one of the songs that you wrote on Southeastern opens it up, Cover Me Up.
Oh, right, yeah.
That is, I mean, you just laid yourself straight out, stripped naked, bare.
Yeah, that was tough.
To her.
That was tough to write. Really hard to sing it for
her. I don't know this song. What's that all about?
It's a song that I wrote on... It was three records ago. It was right after I got sober, and I got out of rehab and stayed sober for a few months and then started working on this album. I mean, I'm still sober from that time, but I started working on this album once my brain started sort of re-solidifying into an actual object again. And I wrote this song about her and for her, and we were doing this thing. She was writing a record at that time, too, so we would separate in the house and go to separate parts of the house and write and then come back together and play what we had worked on for each other at the end of the day, like an exercise. And that was really, really hard because we weren't married then at the time. We were living together in sin, but we weren't married. And I know her, and it was just really, it was really hard to sing directly to her about our relationship at that point in time, you know. And I think that's why it worked, because I really wanted it to be just right.
Your mom said about you, be careful what you say around this guy. It will be in a song if you're not careful. Is that true?
Sometimes, yeah. I mean, I definitely have relationships that have suffered from that kind of thing. But, you know, the songs are very important to me.
Sometimes is it easier sometimes to say it in a song than it is to the person in the face?
Oh, yeah. Not easier, but it's easier to get it right in a song for me, I think. It's not easier to approach the subject because you got to edit and work to get it the right way, but I don't spend time sitting around editing what I'm going to say.
Well, that's a mistake a lot of us make. So in this new CD of yours, The Nashville Sound, I was just looking through it, and it seemed to me like you could have written this CD yesterday. Some of it resonates, I don't know if in ways you intended, right now with the current emotion of the country. Were you kind of writing on two levels here, telling individual stories but also a bigger story?
I was trying to. I mean, I think you get to a point in your career where, you know, you write enough songs about your own personal struggles, about your love life, about your family, about growing up, all these things. And then if you're like me, you just sort of get bored of focusing on your own personal issues. And, you know, I got some of those issues resolved, in all honesty. You know, I'm a very happy person now. I haven't always been. And it's hard to write Smith songs when you're a happy person, you know. So there came a point in my life when I thought, well, I have a responsibility to use the gift that I have to try to talk about the world outside. But you've got to be very careful, because if you don't pick the right details, this has happened to a lot of songwriters, if you don't pick the right details, you get vague, and then you start writing songs that just don't really mean a whole lot at the end of the day.
Well, let me pick an example. Hey, Elif, let's go to White Man's World, which sings about a number of things. You can explain it to us, but there's a line in here that I think a lot of us can relate to, unfortunately. Go ahead and hit it, Elif. It goes on. Was that a specific episode? Because I think all of us have been in that room, and we've been in the unfortunate mm-hmm. company of somebody, and we regret not having done what we should have done. We don't even know what that is. I don't know what to do in that situation. When somebody says something that's bigoted, and you hate it, and you later hate yourself for not saying or doing the right thing.
Yeah, I know what to do in that situation.
What do you do in that situation?
You know, I speak up. I say, I don't want to hear that kind of crap. You know.
Was this about a specific incident?
There were quite a few when I was growing up, and you know, I grew up in Alabama, and there are a lot of open-minded people there, more than most people would realize probably, but there are also a lot of people who are afraid of anybody who's different. So I heard, you know, a lot of jokes, a lot of all kinds of stuff growing up. I think most people did, whether they grew up in the South or not, but you know, at some points I was afraid. I was afraid for the social situation, or, you know, I was afraid to get in an argument or get in a fight with some grubby kid from the trailer park, you know. But yeah, I grew up in it, and I learned it's worth it. It's worth it. Whatever happens, it's worth it to stand your ground.
Because, the one before that, pardon me, you wrote in Hope the High Road. Hope the High Road. You wrote, last year was a son of a bitch for nearly everyone we know, but I ain't fighting with you down in the ditch. I'll meet you up here on the road.
Mm-hmm.
What are you talking about there?
I'm talking about the rules of order, you know. I think that we get more done when we try to stay on the right side of the line of diminishing returns. People stop listening when you start yelling at them. And I think using language the right way, where it means something, you know, and not doing things like co-opting a term to serve your own purposes.
You talking about politics at all in this song?
Well, I'm talking about belief. Right now I'm talking about politics because that is really that's the rules of order, you know, that's how we exchange power. But in that song, I'm talking about my beliefs, you know, and a lot of people will call it politics to make it more manageable for.
Well, I think it resonates again today. I think people are looking at that saying, that was a tough year. You were right.
It was tough. It was tough. And hopefully it won't be as tough, you know, going forward, but things may get worse before they get better. I remember seeing, our good friend John Prine, who lives in Nashville now, but he's from Chicago originally. He was my hero before he became my friend. But I remember hearing him sing Sam Stone a few months ago at a show in Nashville, a song he wrote about the Vietnam War and some of the fallout from that. And he said, I thought people would just forget. I thought this song might be popular in 1971, 1972, and then the war would be over and we'd all go on about our lives and nobody would care anymore. But still, you know, those stories mean something to people.
Jason Isbell's in our studio. His latest is the Nashville Sound. He's at the Chicago Theater tonight. I have to take a quick break, and then I'll just keep you for 1 minute. We come back. Is there a favorite? Think about this. Is there a favorite line in this song? I'm going to play a clip from one of your songs that I think is the best on the album. But do you have one that you go, man, that's the one I love? In a minute on GN.
Lovers leave chaos and clothes. Quiet corners where you rarely ever go. One day you find proof that she was real despite your struggle to forget. Oh, yes. You're in a fight to the death, my friend. Black metal t-shirt, your shield. You've got the past on your breath, my friend. Now name all the monsters you've killed. Let's name all the monsters you've killed. Man, she chose.
Jason Isbell's in our studio. That's some of his latest from the Nashville Sound. Now, name all the monsters that you've killed. Let's name all the monsters that you've killed. I don't know what you had in mind when you wrote that. Don't tell me, but I love that line. I love that song.
Yeah, well, thank you. It's you know, it's one of those things where you sometimes you find yourself trying to encourage somebody and trying to remind somebody of the things that they've been through in the past and the fact that they can get through something now, you know.
So you're encouraging somebody with that.
Trying to, yeah. Yeah. I don't know if it wound up being very encouraging or not, but that was my attempt.
And the audience in this studio right now is a friend of mine named Eric Caraffa. He's in a band himself. He's going to be at your show tonight. He turned me on to you. What's the song on this CD or the line that jumps out at you, Eric?
I think Cumberland Gap. Is my favorite song on the record.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah. It's about sort of alienation in one respect and sort of wanting to break away like, you know, we do as we grow up, but you can't because you're of a place. Yeah. And that place is significant, and that narrative throughout that song just really resonates.
Well, thank you. And, you know, sometimes even if the place is dying, you know, even if it's kind of crumbling around you, it's like you wind up being the guy that's staying in the burning house, you know. We were playing in Whitesburg, Kentucky one time, and I saw a coal miner drinking a beer right after the town had gone wet after decades of not selling any alcohol. And he was covered in coal dust from head to toe, and he was just staring at this beer like he'd never seen one before in his life, you know. And that was where a lot of that story came from, you know, trying to find the story that went along with that detail.
Congratulations on all that you've done. I know we've passed our time for you to get out of here. You got to go do a sound check. And
thank you. Oh yeah, Frank Turner's with us tonight and tomorrow. Remember to say that. Frank and his band are incredible. They're UK folk punks, punk folks. I don't know which one he'd like first. He's a folk punk.
and you're there tonight too at the Chicago Theater. Thanks for coming into our studio.
Thank you
Chicago.
For having me.
Yeah,
you
it's
know,
been
I,
fun.
Yeah, I'm a fan. I grew up watching Cubs games on WGN and the grand prize game with Bozo the Clown. Wondering how the parents felt about Bozo giving away a bun coffee maker to the 6-year-old. You know. So yeah, I'm happy to be here.
Have some caffeine, kid.
Yeah, here.
Go crazy.
Have the best coffee maker in America, you 6-year-old kid with a ping pong ball.
See, it's so tempting to say, okay, is there a song in that? Like, I mean, does your mind work way, or do people work that array around you?
Yeah, people's mind work that way, but I would need somebody from Chicago to write a song called Grand Prize Game. I think that's got to happen.
Yeah, really. If we find out you wrote it, you get it wrong, you are death to this town.
I can't write that.
Don't touch that unless you know it.
We need somebody from around here to write. Maybe Jeff Tweedy could write Grand Prize Game.
I bet he could.
I bet he could.
Mm-hmm. This is WGN.